Okay, good morning. It is Thursday, May 30th at 10 a.m. This is Henry Harris, and welcome to another version of the Weekly Emunah Teleforum. Today's topic we'll be discussing will be the power of giving and how things can only be created through the power of giving, and that in order to be effective in the power of giving, one must see and experience deeply how he is being given to. Okay, so we're going to be talking about the power of giving and how one gives through seeing his own being given to. That's the topic for today, but first we'll begin with our general review of what this call is about. This call is a conversation about the mitzvah of Emunah and related mitzvahs, constant commandments, in particular the mitzvah of Lo Yelucha Elohim Acherim, not to have powers, not to believe in powers other than the Creator. Emunah, the belief in the single Creator, that there is a soul and single power behind everything, that there is no existence at all moments independent of the single source. And that includes our psychological experience. That includes our mental experience. We're not having an experience of the circumstances of our lives in a direct sense. We don't have the ability to have a direct experience because those experiences, anything of this world, anything that is created, is by definition not capable of causing other things, including our emotional experience. So where does our experience come from? Well, it comes from that single source. It comes from the flow of energy that animates this world and sustains this world moment to moment to moment. That's this conversation. Now, the ability to see this for oneself is something that itself follows the same rules as the truth that we're describing. The truth we're describing is that there is only one way in which anything is created, and that's through the gift of divine energy in this moment. That's the only way anything is created, and even our capacity to kind of to have an insight about that is itself, it's normal, it's a normal human experience to sense that we're experiencing an inner world unfolding inside of us. It's a normal human experience, but that's not something that I can turn on. It's not something that I have the control over, because my perception itself is something that is limited to a playing field that is being generated and created for me. Now, what's my choice in the matter? My choice in the matter is to know that my playing field, the emotional landscape that I'm residing in a given moment, that is coming from a source beyond me, that I'm residing in a wisdom source, a health source, something that is whole and pure and healthy and safe. So, for example, a phenomenon of becoming upset or reactive to someone in my midst, it certainly feels compelling to me that that person or that event is a trigger. You know, it's literally it's a button that is being pushed inside of me that activates anger or activates upset or fear, something to that effect. But I know the truth on a certain level that playing field of fear, that feeling of fear itself is a result of a playing field. Like, you know, we have states of mind, we have moods. Our moods are not consistent. In one mood, reminding myself of, I was speaking with someone just recently who's a highly accomplished professional, highly accomplished, has a position of significant authority in a community, and there are times where there are fires in the community that he has to address, and he certainly experiences stress and pressure in the presence of those fires that need to be put out. And he mentioned to me that there are times when those stress feelings come, you know, surging, that he feels a lack of equilibrium. He feels the fear surging, and he doesn't like it. And he's looking around, he's casting about for how to stabilize his ship. And he mentioned that one of the things that he'll do is he'll review his credentials, you know. He'll review, he went to an Ivy League this, and he got a highly acknowledged degree in this. And I asked him, so would you say that those credentials, that information is something that succeeds in stabilizing the ship? And he said, not really, like, in fact, not at all. Because information is not itself powerful. Information is part of this world. It's part of the form of this world. And we're looking to where and how what's behind the form, you know, the formless energy, the divine energy that's behind the form that we're not in control over. And it's that information that he might use that information at times. It might be that he reviews in his own mind, you know, I've been here before, I've done this, I was well trained, I had the experts of the field, you know, train me, etc. There might be times where that information does accomplish something on his behalf. But that would be more owing to his own state of mind than it would to the information itself. In a nicer state of mind, we're closer to kind of an equilibrium. In a nicer state of mind, we're kind of, you know, we ourselves possess wisdom in the moment that allows us to kind of, you know, reconnect to a certain equilibrium. So it's never the circumstances, it's never the information. We're really looking at how the human beings are kind of living, breathing divine energy flowing inside of our hearts that are coloring our states of mind. Our mind is like a sky, you know, there's a beautiful sky, and we get distracted by the weather in the sky. It's gray and cloudy. Uh-oh, what do I do? Oh, it's blue and sunny. How do I keep it this way? Whereas what we're looking to do is to be less interested in the actual weather itself and more interested in the phenomenon of this beautiful sky that can fill up with gray and then disperse into blue and sun. You know, the sky is pure and whole and healthy and wondrous, and it's a place where new form shows up. The power of that is that it allows us just a whole different experience of our own internal phenomenon, you know, our own internal psychological experience. We're having psychological experiences, but there's a way in which we're watching it and seeing it from a simplicity, you know, that simple wisdom inside of us that can be in an unpleasant state and not be gripped and not become drowned by it, right? So in no way are we talking about disappearing forever, insecure, fearful, angry states of mind. But we are talking about the power of knowing what's true about those states of mind, about turning our orientation toward becoming a truth seeker rather than a feeling seeker. Being a truth seeker is liberating. The truth does liberate us. And when we're truly oriented toward that as our goal, not only are we accomplishing extraordinary commandments, because that is the mitzvah of Emunah and Lo Yelucha, but we're also aligning ourselves with the actual truth of the world, with the actual truth of reality. And there's no way that we can go wrong by looking and aligning our understanding with that, even if our feelings are rotten in the moment. There is no way that we won't be affected by this ongoing exploration and search for the truth. So that's my intro. Now I want to talk about giving and getting. And I had a conversation with someone who I work with, who's a manager. He has a team that sell things. And he's a little disappointed, and he's not sure how to motivate them. In his words, he's not sure how to get more out of them. And interestingly enough, when I thought of his words, I realized, well, that just those words themselves are pointing to just his words. This sales manager who says, I'm not sure how to get more out of my sales team. Those words themselves point to where he's mistaken, because look at his words. How do I get more out of them? Fundamentally, he's looking to create greater rapport with his sales team. He's looking to create greater devotion in his sales team. And what's noticeable in him is that they're not showing up, you know, and he's not sure how to get more out of them. Well, on a certain level, what occurs to him in this relationship is that he wants something from them. He wants to take something from them, or he wants to receive something from them. He doesn't fundamentally view the relationship as how can I give to them. And that's significant. There's two steps to this. There's first understanding that there is nothing is created without giving. if you're talking about a relationship with a spouse, you're talking about a relationship with a colleague, you're talking about a relationship with a boss or with a child, to the degree that you're looking to create a robust relationship or a relationship of influence or a relationship of positivity, nothing is created without giving. And then more, and then step two of this is understanding that to be a giver, to really stand powerfully in this creative force called giving, one must understand how he or she himself is in the flow, in that exists in that same flow of giving, meaning that you are receiving the giving in a way that is far greater than you are being asked to give. So with this, back to the case of the gentleman with his sales team, the bottom line is that no one, everyone is prepared to invest for something of benefit. People don't want to give more than they see that they're going to receive in return, right? No one wants to do that. Why would I want, in any relationship, in any endeavor, I don't want to give more than I perceive myself to receive. There must be, giving is must define it must characterize the effort in order for that thing that I'm looking to facilitate to come into existence. We see this in the simple expression of the prophet that says, Olam chesed yibonei. The world is created, the world is built through kindness. That's simply pointing to the basic truth that we're talking about all the time. Nothing has independent existence. Nothing, no matter how much something looks like it's already existing, it's self-generating, it's not. There is no, the way, the nature of reality, the nature of how our whole experience of how all of life works, is that nothing has independent existence. Everything is owing its existence ongoingly to a force that is giving to it, that is investing in it, that is endowing it with life. That's what we mean when we say the world was built on kindness. The Almighty is energizing and sustaining everything in every moment. And it's only because of that moment-to-moment act of chesed, of giving, that the world itself exists and continues to exist. So that's like the DNA of how things are created, is that there's giving. And simultaneously, an interaction in which there's, you know, it looks like I'm being asked it looks like I'm being taken from more than I'm being offered. Well, there's not much of prospects of that success, and that's what these sales team people are experiencing. It looks like they're being taken from. The guy wants something from them. He wants commitment from them. He wants devotion from them. He wants a sense of ownership from them, and he can see that because they don't have that, because they're not giving that, they're not succeeding, and his bottom line is not growing. So fundamentally, he's like, how do I get this out of them? He doesn't see that it's an act of giving to offer this to them. It doesn't occur to him. And the reason why I'm suggesting that so is because he is not seeing for himself where and how he is standing in an experience of being given to. There's something that has eluded him. The world looks like a place where things can make or break his quality of life. You know, like he wants a certain measure of success. He wants a certain number of sales to occur. He wants a certain amount of hours logged. Like for him, his well-being and his sense of like what drives me, what floats my boat, so to speak, is a certain set of circumstances and events happening in the world. They take effort. These people are not giving me what I need in the realm of effort. I'm frustrated with them. What he hasn't seen is where and how, coming up against the limits of this conversation, his limits in vis-a-vis his talking to his team, their limits vis-a-vis their accomplishing more in sales, he hasn't seen that there is an opportunity to receive that far exceeds the opportunity of investment. That's just simply what he hasn't seen, and that's why he can speak. You know, when he has clients, right? He's working with a sales team that is looking to sell a product to customers. It's obvious to him that his clients must feel that they're being served. You know, the clients are not going to lay out money and fundamentally view that the money they're putting in is more than what they're going to get in terms of the product as well as the experience of the service. He knows that, of course, people are prepared to, no one's going to begrudge paying money for a product, but they just want to feel that the money they're putting down for the product is less than the value than they're getting. They're getting more from the product, both in the quality of the product as well as the experience of the transaction with the salesperson. That's how it works. So his biggest clients are his sales team, right? Those are in many ways like the most significant clients that he has. And what he hasn't seen is how to convey to them, hey, do you see this opportunity here? There's something that you're not seeing that is so powerful for you. Like the investment that you could make is so small relative to what you could gain in the process of you taking on or tackling kind of a bigger sales challenge. I think this is, you know, this is just to step back for a second and generalize about this scenario. There are people in our lives that we are trying to influence. We're trying to get a message across to. They might be receptive. They might be not receptive. And we can feel ourselves frustrated. We can feel ourselves challenged. Like I said, a spouse, a child, a relative of some kind, a neighbor. And what we have, when we reside in that feeling of annoyance, in that feeling of like, you know, annoyance is a great word. When we reside in the feeling of annoyance, it's because fundamentally we are looking at a scenario where we feel that our bread is being buttered from circumstances. Our bread is being buttered from what and how people do interact with us. And if I can't get the person to do this or to think this or to agree with this, then I'm going to be diminished. My experience of life is going to be diminished. I'm dependent on this experience. That is where annoyance comes from. And good luck in trying to, you know, reason with someone from a place of annoyance. Hey, you're wronging me. I'm paying you X wage. I'm offering you Y incentives. And as far as I'm concerned, you're just not pulling your weight. Can you please pull your weight? Good luck. You know, good luck with that conversation moving someone to, you're right, I should dig in and find a whole new opportunity available here to invest, you know? Or alternatively with, you know, your child, like, you're not doing chores around the house, you're not doing your schoolwork, we're here providing you with X, Y, Z, all the things that you need, we're not asking much of you, and you just won't do some basic requests. So, to the degree that there's annoyance, I'm not saying that these conversations are forbidden. I don't mean that at all. And the conversation can be effective. But the annoyance, the feeling behind it is pointing to an attitude of taking, to an understanding that overlooks the extraordinary way in which we're standing in a flow of giving. And that the only way that anything is created, including me, is through tuning into and it being a conveyor of this power of giving. So with regards to my child, if I'm going to stand in a place of annoyance, I know I'm not going to get very far. And that annoyance is my first cue to remind myself I've lost touch. I've lost touch with the way the world works. I've lost touch with the sense that someone is depriving me of my well-being through his misbehavior. Someone is depriving me of something fundamental to my well-being, and I have to go out and take it from him. That's a misunderstanding. That's dependence on circumstances. That's the illusion of outside in. The clarity, the truth of inside out is, no, I'm free. I am free. I am free of my circumstances. I care about circumstances. I'm committed to accomplishing certain things in the world, but I acknowledge that I don't have direct control of those circumstances, and those circumstances don't have direct control over me. I'm standing in an extraordinarily expansive, generous, divine energy. And all I know is that when I'm in annoyed, upset mode, I've stepped away from it. So back to this gentleman with his sales team, I'm not sure what to advise him in terms of a conversation. You know, if he's going to ask me for tools or techniques in terms of how to sit down with these people, there's really not a lot I can advise him on, because I don't, from a heart that feels stingy, from a heart that feels dependent, codependent, there's not a lot of moving words that are going to come forth. But what I can offer to him and what I am offering to him is revisit the underlying premise of his annoyance, that he would never approach an actual customer with annoyance, ever. Like, he would never view, I mean, it'd be crazy, right? Like, he knows that the customer, of course, is not going to begrudge him a living. Of course the customer is going to pay a fair price. It's just that the customer wants to feel that he's getting an extraordinary act of service. How can I be of service to you? That's the defining quality of our interaction. And if the customer feels that I'm trying to take something from him, it's going to repel him, right? It's no different. We want to find that clarity in our lives in general, that we are free from our dependence on circumstances. We are the recipients of an extraordinary generosity. Like, literally, we have this crazy bank account of wealth, of spiritual and emotional health and well-being. And an annoyance experience, an anger experience, is all it is it's telling me nothing about the facts of this interaction. It's just reminding me that I've lost touch with the truth. And of course, that's human. Of course, it's normal. Of course, I even despite my understanding of the inside-out nature of life, I'm prone to lose track of it. I'm prone to fall into to the annoyance and upset of an outside-in experience. And there's no need to grind away at it. I don't need to kind of process and figure out how to talk to this person and how to overcome this animosity. It's not going to get me where I want to go. I want to go back to my own internal truth. I want to go back to that truth. I want to revisit it. I want to revisit where and how that generosity has shown up in my life and attest to the truth of that inside-out phenomenon. And I certainly want to daven. I want to pray. Prayer is definitely about identifying where things are, when we're missing something, what accounts for that thing missing in our life? It's certainly not coming from the colleague, the employee, the child. It's certainly coming from the divine. Like, everything comes from the divine. Things that are missing in our life or things that we don't want in our lives, those things are coming from the Almighty. And it's up to us to turn inward and to look for that truth. That's the platform that is going to allow us to navigate and to find new thought. You know, this person, this manager, is looking for a different feeling. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for a different feeling, which he can't generate. That feeling doesn't get generated from his intellectual processing, from his facts and figures and things of that nature. It comes as a gift, as everything does. Everything that's created can only come as a gift. And when we want to create influence, when we want to create relationships, so we want to stand. We want to stand in that experience of seeing and acknowledging the power of giving that we're on the receiving end of, that we can then be an extension of and offer to others. And in that way, we will be successful in generating and creating and forming connections and causing influence of a helpful nature. Okay, well, those are my thoughts for the morning. I would love to hear your thoughts and or your comments or questions. And I'm going to unmute you, and then if you want, you can remute yourself.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Rabbi Harris. It's Suri from Vancouver. How are you?
Oh, hi, Suri. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice, too. You see, I think an interesting position. So I've been involved in the principles for a long time, you know, a good 4 or 5 years or something. I think that's a long time. So I'm in a situation now where I know that everything is coming from a divine place. And what happens is that when I'm, let's say, wanting something in my life and going through something that's very hard for me, I found myself resentful. I found myself like, oh my gosh, okay, human beings, fine, they're flawed, and I accept that. But I feel like, God, you know so much better, and like, you know that I don't deserve this anymore. So can you just like stop, you know? And I found myself almost resentful almost at God, to tell you the truth.
Mm.
And I wonder if you could speak to that.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
I would say that resentment doesn't only happen toward spouses, children, and colleagues. I would say resentment happens toward God, at least in my experience, quite a bit, you know. Both in my own experience and in the experience of people that I talk to, there is, I definitely can relate to and hear regularly people describing, look, this is, you know, the circumstances I'm in are just, the normal people are going to suffer in this circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And you, God, know me, you know my nature, you know the nature of the circumstances I find myself in.
Mm-hmm.
It is only it's normal and natural to experience suffering.
Yeah.
Is that what you're kind of pointing at?
Yeah. And I'm kind of pointing at, like, where I feel, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I'm not sure if ego is coming into play here. Like, I know better, and I'm the one who should decide what I should be going through in my life and what I shouldn't be. You know how, like, they say, like, die, like, enough already? And I found myself, like, when I pray or when I daven, I'm in a position of just like, oh my gosh, please Hashem, just do this for me already. And then sometimes I find myself even angry, and I'm thinking, when I'm thinking, who am I to be angry? Like, I can't even, like, create a banana, you know, if I wanted to. But I just find it difficult to accept. I find it difficult to keep on accepting. That's what, you know, I find.
Well, can I ask you a question, Suri?
Sure.
Would you say your anger level is kind of consistent?
Oh, no. No, it's not. It's not consistent.
Hmm.
Right. So that's what you're pointing to, right? You're pointing to that. It's true. I did have that thought the other day. I thought to myself, oh, I want to tell you. I want to share something with you. So I live in a very beautiful place, and there's a lot of nature. And once in a while, I see hummingbirds. And when I see them, I feel just elation, because to me, they're the most beautiful, wonderful creatures. They're green, and they have these red necks, and they go into the flowers. And when I see these birds, I just experience a lot of joy, you know, and wonder. And also, at the same time, there are a lot of crows here. And crows, I just think, are creepy, you know. It's just a weird color and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, you know, some thoughts are like hummingbirds. They bring you joy, and they bring you a good feeling, and, you know, all that. And I thought, some thoughts are like crows. They're kind of weird and yucky, and you just don't want to, because they're even aggressive. They'll come at you, these crows, if you're sitting at the park or something. And I figured, like, okay, you know what? But they both fly away. The crows fly away, and the hummingbirds fly away. And I felt like thought is like that, you know, like a beautiful bird or something not as pleasant.
Mm.
So I hear what you're saying, right? That, yeah, sometimes it comes and sometimes it goes.
Yeah, you know, and I stated at the beginning of the call, I don't know if you heard it, but, you know, there's so many lovely metaphors, you know, and one of them is the sky. And the sky is fascinating in that it fills up with gray clouds and, you know, and rain, and then they dissipate, and then it gets blue and sunny. And what we're learning about, in my mind, is about being fascinated and interested in the nature of the sky itself, and not so much, look, of course I experience the gray and the rain, and I experience the blue and the sun. I experience both of those. But even more powerful to me than the specific phenomenon of the gray sky rain or the blue sky sun is just this profound sky that is subject to kind of flow of new things in it, you know? And really that's us, you know, like when we become more interested in just the beauty of the sky is this fascinating thing that is subject to flowing and changing moods. Yeah, okay, I definitely prefer blue and blue sun, but to be honest with you, you know, I kind of like the fact that there's this variety, and you know, it in our own experience, we have this beautiful, safe, healthy space, and there's this weather that's unfolding. And more than I'm interested in the specific content of the sky, I'm kind of, you know, I see value in how the sky is kind of an open space. It's an expansive space. It's a place that's influenced by heaven. You know, it's like there's an unfolding flow of the divine that shows up and animates this sky in a beautiful way. And that's a possible emphasis. You know, there could be the emphasis on, well, what's the sky look like now? You know, how do I feel about the sky now? That's certainly a normal way of emphasis, you know, kind of relating to and focusing. But there's also the beauty of just look at the sky, that it's so flowing and it's capable of getting this and then getting that. And it points to there being a connection to a source that is, you know, where's it coming from? Like, where's the weather coming from? How does that work that the sky fills up and then empties and empties and fills up? That points to the connection, and that's true of our moods as well. You know, our moods are safe. Our moods are not truly capable of harming us.
You're saying they're not capable of destroying us? Really? You feel that way?
I certainly feel the pain. I feel their pain, but what I've come to appreciate on some level, I don't always see this, you know, so clearly, but I can deal with pain. You've dealt with pain. Mm-hmm. You've been through plenty of pain in your life in a way that you navigated it beautifully.
You know, it's interesting because I have a few daughters, and my oldest is almost 20. And I notice a difference between how I deal with her how I dealt with her when she was younger before I was aware of the principles and now. So I know my eldest, when she was struggling with something, I would do whatever I could to fix it. That was one. And also I would, you know, I would consistently ask her, let's say the next morning, are you okay? Does that still bother you? And that sort of thing. And my daughter, my younger daughter, she's almost 12, so she's having a hard time. Her best friend is moving away to Nevada, and it's very difficult for her. And I see a difference here. Like, so the other day, we're in the car, and we came back from a fair, and she's just, like, in a wonderful mood, and all of a sudden, I turn around, and she's crying. I don't know what happened. Like, all of a sudden, she says, I don't want Vita to move. And I let her cry. I just held her hand. I didn't say anything. And after a little while, I asked her, you know, do you want me to say something, or do you want to just, tell me what you want? And she says, okay, you can say something, because often she doesn't want my advice anyway. So I said to her, this is hard for you, and I know it's hard. It's very hard when a friend moves away. And also, you'll be just fine. You'll figure out what you need to do, and you will be just fine. You're okay. And it's so interesting, right? Because we came home, and 10 minutes later, she's in her room making slime. It's all over, you know? And that was really cool. That was really cool. Yeah, I feel like when you raise children this way, it's really powerful.
Yeah, and you know whose children we are.
All right. Yeah.
And you know, it would seem that you have the opportunity to see something. You know, it's so beautiful when you see on the parenting end, you see how special and how profound it is for a person, for your child, to know something about this mood experience and the flow experience. You know, you see how precious and beautiful it is, and yet involves, you know, some hard times. And I guess I think it's safe to say that parents go through that learning experience too. That's what allows us to be able to stand in a space of health, even as circumstances can feel, you know, this way or that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's interesting also, you know, when you go through things, what it does to you, how it makes you stronger, You know, I of course I don't want to be so. I don't want to be strong. I don't want to. I don't want to like have growth. I just want to stay exactly where I am. But it's funny because the other day, one of my kids said to my other kid, he said, "Yeah, mommy is a powerhouse." And I was like, "What?" I couldn't believe it. I was so like, you know, I'm like 5'2". What? But yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, I guess I do things for my kids, you know, to make them better. And even if they don't want to become better, even if they don't want to fold their laundry and be on time and be organized, because I know what it's going to be in life like when they don't have those skills. So I guess the answer is Hashem does the same thing for me or for us or for people, you know. He teaches them what they need to learn.
And you know, and your anger hurts. You know, your frustration hurts. But but it's fascinating to see. You're not standing there all the time. You know, it's
no. That's a good point. That's a really good point. It lends to such a feeling of helplessness sometimes. You know, it's like I really wish I had more control over my own experience. And I have found something a little bit helpful, and that is what I do is when I find like thoughts coming crowding into my head, especially certain thoughts are very sticky, and certain thoughts are like have these like gigantic vacuums, you know, attached to them. They just are huge. And I'm not sure if I'm clear what I'm trying to say. Certain thoughts I find are much heavier and bigger than others and take up a lot more energy and can cause a lot more angst than others.
Mm-hmm.
I was like giving an example to someone. I said, like, for example, here where I live, they're very environmentally conscious. And everything is like recycling. You become a militant recycler if you live here. Otherwise, you get fined and all that. And the truth is, I have a friend who I work with, and she is very, she wouldn't even eat from a paper plate ever. And she was giving me this data about the earth and the plastic and the ocean. And I was thinking, you know what? She actually has a point. Like, she's right. Something is going on with the ocean, and something is going on with the temperature. But it didn't bother me. Like, I didn't go home that night and think to myself, oy vey, the world is going to drown in itself. Like, it doesn't have any allure to me. But I see that certain thoughts have a lot of allure to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, for example, let's say something like fear. Like paranoia or being in a place at night where it's dark, that doesn't scare me at all. That doesn't have any pull. But I noticed that certain thoughts, like things involving my kids and the care for them, that is very powerful to me. So that's one thing I saw. And also I saw that thoughts, give me a second, I actually lost my train of thought. But it had, give me a minute. So sometimes what I find the thoughts are crowding into my head, especially the sticky ones about my kids, I think to myself, this is just thought. Just thought. That's it. Thought. And somehow when I spot it, it does help. Then later on, it does sometimes come back crowding in. But I do find that it helps. When I point to what it is, it has less power. Sometimes. So yeah,
you continue to listen for those cues. You know, you continue to listen to where and how this understanding will be reliable and helpful to you. You know, do it. It's you know, obviously there's the wariness of the, you know, the concept of a technique, because you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about thought. You know, we're talking about, you know, just a moment ago, as you were, it was cute to listen to you, like, wait, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought, and then what happened? The train somehow got back on the track, you know? Now, where and how the train got on the track, I don't know. It was cute to listen as you were talking about thought and this, and then you lost your train, and then the train came back. It's so fascinating where and how our consciousness comes to life with new things, a new understanding. And yeah, there is a powerlessness. There is a powerlessness that I, you know, I that's what I'm coming up against, is that there is a decided powerlessness about, and that's a Jewish idea. You know, everything is in the hands of heaven except the fear of heaven. Everything is being generated by Hashem. Everything except my little corner of free will that can acknowledge that things are being generated by Hashem. You know, I'm wholly independent and free of circumstances. Well, if I'm wholly independent and free of circumstances, then what is it that is accounting for me and my experience if it's not circumstances? Hashem.
Yeah.
I'm wholly owned and animated by him. And I have the possibility to acknowledge that. I do have that power. That's an extraordinary power. And I've seen that using that, making use of that gift is the beginning of all wisdom. That is, whatever mood I'm in, no matter how rotten it is, it's always a beginning of wisdom to know something about, okay, well, what do I know about this rotten mood, you know? Does it mean that I leave my rotten mood? No, but it's valuable. It's truth.
I wonder, though, I wonder if there's control somewhere in there. And I don't know the answer. I have a cousin. She lives in Brooklyn, and she's been learning Tanya for, like, many years. And I said to her, you know, you never get into a mood where you feel like just that's it. You can't take this one more second. And you want to, I don't know what. And she said to me, no, the Tanya doesn't let. And I was thinking, what? What is this woman talking about? But I don't know. She's an honest person, and I know she's telling me the truth.
The Tanya doesn't let, she says?
Yeah, she says the Tanya doesn't let. The Tanya doesn't let. I actually learned Tanya once in a while, but not regularly. She says the Tanya doesn't let a person to spare. She says the Tanya doesn't let a person to say everything is lost and there's no, almost like saying that there's no Hashem anymore.
Right.
And this is what she says, you know? So I'm not sure, like, where that practically leaves me, but this is what she told me.
The wisdom of our sages is real, but it's still the case that the wisdom of our sages can't change our lives through the information of that wisdom, meaning the wisdom that the Tanya is pointing to and the wisdom that the Torah is pointing to is a wisdom that exists beyond words. It's a wisdom that can't be captured in text on paper. It can't be captured in a spoken expression. It can't be captured in a conscious thought. Like my effort to review, you know, Ezu Ashir Asamech Bechelko, who is the wealthy one, the one who focuses on what he has. I could recite that mantra, you know, a lot. But the power of it is not in the words or the form of the words. The power is that it's pointing to something beyond words. And built into that is the realization that what's beyond words is not in my control. You know? And so she, it sounds to me that she's standing in a state of mind that she doesn't recognize how elevated. The fact that it looks to her that it's possible to simply walk away from despair because it's forbidden, that itself is an expression, that's an indication of a level of consciousness that she's standing in that it could look like that.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting. You know, I can see it in other people. Like, say my husband, if he's upset about something, and I can see, like, oh, okay, I know what's happening now. We're in this loop, right? And, you know, I go, okay, he's going to be upset, and then he's going to, you know, have something to eat, and then I'll just kind of calm down, and then it's going to be okay again. And I just so clearly see the loop in other people, and with my kids, too, you know? Well, she'll cry now, and she'll be sad, and she'll go to her room to make slime. But in myself, I don't see the loop. I guess I'm not in that, you know, in that level of consciousness. But to me,
The Tanya is, of course, pointing to a profound truth, but the Tanya is not accessible directly. It's got to be given to us as a gift in the same way everything is gifted to us. And she's standing on a level of consciousness that it looks like, of course you don't go enter into despairing thinking. That's a beautiful state of mind that she seems to be, you know, readily involved in. There are times where my state of mind is such that I can think to myself, I don't like what my kid is doing, but it just doesn't look like a good idea to make a comment to him. And it really looks like something that makes sense to me. Like, I can see that. It's not going to be helpful. There are times where my state of mind is such that that's not accessible to me. Like, maybe the information is there, but I'm going. I'm plowing ahead with my comment, you know? Mm-hmm. So the state of mind is really kind of the variable that is pointing back to this flow, this divine energy that we're, you know, our sky is different in different ways. And the beginning of all wisdom is to know, okay, well, where is this, you know, what's making the sky look the way the sky is looking?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's very profound and cool.
Suri, you should know, listening to you is beautiful. Like, the way you describe what you see, the way you describe what's going on with your family, and even your own acknowledgement about your own experience of difficulty, there's a lot of understanding there. And don't let the experience of dark moods undermine the fact that you've been blessed to see something. It's real. It's really beautiful.
That's cool. Okay. Okay, I'll take that.
I'm not trying to butter you up. I'm just trying to point out.
No, I know. I know you're not. I know you're not. You're not trying to sell me something.
Good. Okay. Good. I'm so happy that you came on the call today.
Yeah, thank you. I hope to come back.
Okay, good.
Yeah, actually here it's 7:44. It's 3 hours earlier.
Oh, wow. You got up early for this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have a comment or a thought or question?
I just wanted to say something to exactly to ask us. We're supposed to work on our midos, right? Like, if someone gets angry, you have to work on yourself and these kind of things. But we don't control if we get an angry thought in the moment. So how does that, like, work?
That's a great question. Right. What is a vodas amidos entail? What's involved in working on one's midos if, in fact, we don't have direct control over the source of our feeling state in a given moment, right, which is divine energy. So here's how it looks to me. You know, our sages make an interesting comment about anger. They say, kol ha-koes ki'ilu oyvei avodah zarah. One who becomes angry is likened to someone who's worshipping idols. Now, it's interesting that the sages are not telling us a technique or a step or an action to take. They are pointing out to us the nature of what's true and the nature of what cannot be true. By definition, idolatry is an illusory worldview, right? It's a mistaken worldview. It's not noticeable to us that it's mistaken. It looks real, but you can be rest assured that it's mistaken. So it's definitely the case that there's Chazal are telling us to become truth seekers. You know, the beginning of avodas amidos to me is, you know, there's a logic behind anger. The logic behind anger is I'm dependent on certain things going certain ways in order for me to have the life I want. And when someone therefore gets in the way of that, then I'm going to be harmed. I'm going to be inconvenienced. I'm going to be damaged, right? So that's the most logical result of that outlook is anger. But what's valuable is to kind of, you know, be interested in seeing where and how our understanding of life and our misunderstanding of life is shaping our experience. That's what it looks like to me. You know, when I'm struggling with anger toward one of my kids, to the degree that it really looks like his behavior is the source of my anger, I could process his behavior and try and develop techniques quite a bit. What I've encountered is that I you know, I'm like a bull, you know, a raging bull that somebody's got some ropes around. You know, the ropes don't really do a lot. You know, when the bull sees red, he reacts. But to the degree that step one is I can tell the truth about my anger, and I can acknowledge the illusion behind my anger. Then I'm tuning into an alternative source. And that's what I see, is that the Almighty helps me. You know, when I'm not paying attention to a falsehood, I'm experiencing new thought. I'm getting, you know, like what Suri just described, how she's angry at the Almighty at times, but she's not always angry at the Almighty. When she sees that, she'll recognize, wait a second, maybe it's not the circumstances that are the source of my anger, because I don't always feel angry. And then the Almighty is providing new thought. He's providing the gift of understanding. We become appreciative of it. You know, there's a shift that can take place. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess the more you understand this and get to know where your feelings are coming from.
That's right. That's right. Because there's no way to create a different feeling in yourself with your own hands or your own, you know, mechanical thinking process. It arises as a gift. And
I feel like folks will be talking, I guess, if you really like believe that whatever Hashem is doing is for your good, then you won't get so angry.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, 100%. And Hashem has told us in advance, I'm pumping your heart, your spiritual heart, I'm pumping it with two different hearts. I'm pumping it with two different flows. I'm going to pump your spiritual consciousness with warm, peaceful thinking. I'm going to pump it with insecure, fearful, self-centered thinking. I'm going to pump it with both, right? That's what Hashem tells us in advance. And he also tells us that your main children in this world are your good choices. You're going to experience a process of like a birth, like into a birth experience. There's going to be pain in the process of bearing a child. There's going to be contractions, and you won't be able to control that surge of pain. There will be a contraction to a woman's uterus. There will be a contraction to your consciousness. And in that moment of contraction, it will feel natural to feel anger, hurt, resentment, trapped. It will feel normal to feel those things. It is not a function of your defective personality. It's not a function of this person's, you know, behavior directly. It's a function of the way the Almighty flows his flow through you, and he's told us in advance that he's going to do it. And guess what? A beautiful baby comes from that process. New understanding emerges from the flow of those contractions and dilations. And guess what else? No matter how many times a woman gives birth to a beautiful baby, the next time around it's still labor. It's still contractions. You don't necessarily get the understanding and then you're done. It's true that it changes you. It's true that it elevates your consciousness in a way that you become a different person. But you know, it's not like you're not subject to the contraction process going forward. You still, birth still is going to involve that.
Right, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of freedom there. You know, there's a lot of freedom there to be, you know, to be with the experience that you're having and to know that it's there's a beautiful and divine quality to it. It can hurt, and in no way is that a contradiction to the beauty of it. And how fortunate are we? You know, how fortunate are we to know something about this, to have this wisdom that we have seen something about, that we have a Torah that gives us these metaphors that help us to see the world from the inside out. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is amazing. The more you see it.
Well, we're coming to the end of our hour. I don't know if anybody has a kind of a last minute or, you know, thought to part with, or it was just a lovely morning, and I'm so grateful for your involvement. Perhaps it makes sense to sign off. All right, well, I'm going to wish everybody a beautiful week and a great Shabbos.